is history. And you will always remember where you were June 28th of 2023.
So, does a perfect game still count if it's against the worst team in baseball? And it's question. A Yankee.
Yeah.
Wow, pretty amazing stuff. Late last night, Domingo Germán with a perfect game, the 24th in Major League history, and this was the perfect storm for him, but a weird situation in regards to how he pitched a perfect game. Let me explain this, and welcome to Sports Ticket, Wade and Dusty with you. Perfect games you cannot expect. They just happen. There's nothing that leads up to a perfect game. You say, well, you know, tonight, this is going to be a perfect, this is a no-hitter or a perfect game. A pitcher may warm up and say, man, I got great stuff. But a pitcher never goes, ah, I'm going to throw a no-hitter today. Mm-hmm. Or I'm going to throw a perfect game today. Domingo Germán, in his last start before last night, do you know how many runs he allowed?
I have no idea. I've never heard of the guy until this morning.
Okay. You want to take a guess?
10.
How do you do this?
I don't know.
It was 10.
They're straight guesses.
I have no
obviously.
Idea. Maybe he does have an idea.
It's just like it had
Dusty's
to be.
Dusty's a good poser here.
It's just like it had to be something high if we're talking about it, right? So I went double digits right at 10.
Domingo Germán, his last start, he allowed 10 runs on 8 hits.
Man.
The Yankee announcer said when the extended cut that I didn't play that he was perhaps pitching last night to stay in the rotation.
Mm-hmm.
His last two starts, he's given up 17 runs on 15 hits and 5 1/3. So clearly everybody should have been ready for a perfect game last night, right?
Yeah.
Now, it is the A's, and they're bad. And by the way, thankfully this was in front of 12,793 fans, because usually the A's have 2,000 this year. So that's good. That's the Yankee draw, because it was pretty much all Yankee fans there. Which, at least, there were fans there to enjoy it. 24th perfect game in Major League history. He is the first. It's the first perfect game thrown by a Dominican-born pitcher. The most runs ever scored for a pitcher in a perfect game, 11. So that's the perfect storm. He had a comfortable lead. Yeah. He didn't have to worry about a 1-0 game, 2-0 game, so forth and so on. His pitch count was manageable all night. He only threw 99 pitches, so that was not a problem. How many times have we seen the last few years where a guy has a no-hitter and gets pulled after 7 and he's thrown 110 pitches?
Mm-hmm.
So a perfect game, he was no problem. He was not as stressed because he had a big lead. He didn't have to worry about the pitch count getting him in trouble. His curveball was outstanding. He only went to a 3-ball count a few times all night long. He got a couple of good defensive plays, a good one by Anthony Rizzo at first in the 5th inning, although there wasn't no top 10 SportsCenter highlight that saved his day like some. The most recent perfect game was in 2012 when Felix Hernandez of the Mariners accomplished a feat on August 15th, which was the third perfect game that year. Matt Cain and, oh yeah, Philip Humber. Everybody remembers him.
Oh yeah.
Philip Humber had a perfect game. It's the most recent Yankees perfect game. Well, the most recent until last night. You got to go back 24 years. July 18th, 1999. You remember the Yankee pitcher that threw the perfect game? Former Royal.
David Cone.
David Cone.
Yeah. I was going to say either David Wells or David Cone.
Well, Wells did it the year before, 1998.
Yeah, I couldn't remember which one was which.
Don Larson in the 56 World Series threw a perfect game. So with Herman's perfect game, the Yankees now move ahead of the White Sox for the Major League Baseball lead for perfect games thrown by their pitchers, as they both had 3, and now the Yankees have had 4 pitchers throw a perfect game, 4 of the 24 in Major League Baseball history. Oh, yeah, and here's one more little nugget. Germán had never completed a game in his Major League Baseball career. He goes the distance, struck out 9, never really threatened by the lackluster A's offense. He reportedly worked ahead of the count. A's made hard contact just 3 times out of the 18 balls they put in play. Listen, the next perfect game is probably going to come against the Royals. We've seen, I don't forget who it was that was pitching, had a no-hitter through 6 or 7 against the Royals. The Royals' offense isn't all that, as we know. And so it could very well happen a no-hitter or a perfect game against the Royals, maybe even as soon as this season. But Domingo Germán, pitching, according to the announcer, maybe for his spot in the rotation, that's how bad he had been, naturally throws a perfect game last night.
That's just, I mean, It definitely, it defies odds.
It does.
Sure, there's no question. I mean, he gave up 17 runs over the last two games, and now you pitch a perfect game.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even care who you're playing if it's the worst team in the league, right? Yeah. Like, that just
doesn't add up.
That doesn't add up. It doesn't happen. It happens now, I guess, but it's crazy. Like, it's nothing makes sense about that at all.
That was the third perfect game thrown at Oakland Coliseum. Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
3 out of the 24 have been at Oakland Coliseum. Dallas Braden did it for the A's, and he was announcing the game last night for the A's broadcast.
Yeah.
Dallas Braden's not a household name.
No.
He did it on Mother's Day, if I remember correctly. Crazy stuff. You just never know what you're going to see in sports. That's what makes sports so cool. Now, you kind of know what's going to happen to the Royals from time to time.
The pitch. And he swings and lines one to deep left field. This ball is gone! It's a line drive, grand slam home run into the Cleveland bullpen in left. And Jose Ramirez with the first grand slam of the year for Cleveland. His fifth career grand slam.
That put the Guardians up 4-0. They would hold on and win. 14-1 was the final after pitching 12 and a third scoreless innings to start his Major League Baseball career. Austin Cox, who got his first career start, didn't end well. Listen, he was great through the first couple innings. He was fine. He got to through the lineup, started to deal with the lineup the second time through, and that's when it all fell apart.
Mm-hmm.
He is a perfect pitcher to go through lineup once, and that's it. At least that's what it looks like. He exited after giving up four runs on four hits. He walked four over 3 2/3. He had not been walking people at all prior to that. And seven runs in the sixth inning off of a guy named MacArthur that the Royals called up. Not a great major debut for that kid. One inning, seven runs he gave up. Royals lose 14-1, and here is Matt Cotrero on the rookie left-hander Austin Cox.
He was throwing the ball fine. You know, command was a little erratic. I think he struggled to sustain the velocity, you know, with the heat, and his pitch count got up there a little bit. They made him work hard there in the second and third. So I think it fatigued him a little bit, but his stuff was fine, just lost the zone a little bit. I think it was four walks, which is uncharacteristic for him.
So the Royals are now 22-58. Guardians are 39-40. And if you want to find out who a true Royal fan is, go shake every single one of their hands today at Kauffman Stadium. Because it's an afternoon game, Thursday afternoon at 1:10, and the temperature at first pitch is expected to be 103 degrees. So God bless you if you're at the Royals game today, you are a true Royals fan, or you're just bored out of your mind. And you want to see Zach Greinke, who's 1-8 with an ERA of 5.31. Or maybe you want to see Salvador Perez hit a homer. I don't know what the draw is today. But other than you just love baseball and you support the Royals, or like I said, you're bored, or there's some kind of great coupon they are offering, I don't know. And by the way, Brad Keller yesterday in a rehab assignment in Omaha, Brad Keller, who was in the rotation to start the year, got one out. He threw 20 pitches and only four were strikes. Yeah, not good. Not good.
I may have been able to throw four strikes.
He has that impingement syndrome thing or something, and he may just, I don't know, that may be it. That might be it for him.
Yeah, sad deal because, like, he had so much potential, right? Like,
yeah.
Could go, and then, like, just the last few years, just kind of a couple years anyway, it seems just like, this is where he is, and now he's got issues, too.
So. Remember that first year, the Real Five, and he was up with the team this first or second year? I mean, you're sitting here thinking, you sign him to a long-term deal. He was that good. And it's just gone south, unfortunately. So I saw this on Twitter yesterday. By the way, Keisha is making some changes. We'll get to that here in a moment. The NHL had a draft last night. Major League Baseball to shorten their regular season, possibly. We'll explain why. And more gambling suspensions looming for the National Football League and professional sports, I would imagine. So I saw this. I came across this on Twitter yesterday, and it kind of ticked me off. This one guy put out there, an usher friend. See, when you go to a ball game, there's ushers. And they sometimes help you find your seats or tell you where to go, or they're just checking to make sure that you're going to the right spot and not trying to take somebody's seat, which is fine. This person put on Twitter yesterday, an usher friend last year told him that some of the season ticket holders with seats that are shown on TV will call and complain if someone is in their seats when they're not at the game. So let me give an example. Let's say that somebody is watching the game that season tickets for a Royals game. And maybe maybe it's the crown seat. I don't think you're going to get in the crown seats and just sneak your way there. But maybe you're able to get in the Diamond Club. I don't even know if you can do that. But maybe there's a shot of the third baseline, the first baseline. I don't care where the seat is, whatever it is. Somehow it's seen on TV by a season ticket holder. They know exactly where their seats are. And they see some. They know they're not at the game, clearly. And they see somebody that is sitting in their seat. And apparently there have been some that have some, whether it's 1, 2, 3, 100, I don't know, have called the Royals or other people done this, I'm sure, at other places, have called to complain that somebody's sitting in their seat. For me, the equivalent of this would be this morning at 6:30, I got up and I had a cup of tea. Are you listening, John? I'm not a coffee drinker. I had a cup of tea and I was sitting at my regular chair at the dinner table by myself because nobody else was awake. Right now I have a camera here at the radio station looking back at my dining room table. And my 9-year-old is sitting in my chair. And I'm pissed, and I'm mad, and I'm going to call my wife and tell her that he cannot be sitting in my chair because that's my chair. Even though they're all available, and I'm not there!
Yeah.
How dare he sit in my seat? And if you sit here and go, well, wait, come on, man, that's a little extreme. That's not really comparing apples to apples because this Royals fans, they paid for those seats. I bought the damn dining room table and chairs, people. I paid for that chair. I know this. I wrote the check for it. Okay? So, what does that sound like? Stupid, doesn't it? Sounds really idiotic. And it is idiotic. First of all, when you buy a season ticket or whatever you have, you buy a partial ticket package, and you're not at the game, if you don't like somebody sitting in your seat, then go to the game. That's as simple as that. If you don't go to the game and you see somebody sitting in your seat, especially if it's a young fan, then don't. You're a horrible person if you're calling to complain about that. You're a horrible person. You're one of the most selfish people on earth. That is ridiculous. Second of all, you don't own the seat. I mean, technically, you don't own it. No. You bought the seat. You're renting it is what you're doing. The Royals built the seat. The Royals own the stadium, okay? All right? They're the ones that have the seats that were built and paid for. The Royals are season ticket holders. You are renting a chair. You didn't buy the chair. You're renting the seat. That's what it is. And because next year, you can change seats. Or you can say, I'm done. This team's horrible. And I don't want to be a season ticket holder anymore. It is amazing. It shouldn't be. But it is amazing how selfish people can be. It is amazing how people, first of all, any usher, and I've moved around Kauffman Stadium tons of times over the years when they've been bad. I have never had an usher, maybe they're not paying attention, which I think there's a reason they're not. They know. They see it. I was at the Big 12 tournament. And we went to the semifinals? We were at the semifinals of the Big 12 tournament. KU played Iowa State. Packed house for game one. Packed house. And we were sitting higher. KU won. And I told my oldest, I took him to the Big 12 tournament. Had a blast. First time I ever done it. At T-Mobile Center in Kansas City. And I said, listen, let's move closer to midcourt. Let's move to the lower level. Because trust me, there will be a lot of seats available because it's Texas and TCU the next game, and there ain't a lot of Texas TCU fans here. And my son said, well, we might have to wait till halftime because, you know, you're still a lot of KU and Iowa State fans, and they paid tickets for the whole session. I said, son, I'm going to tell you something right now. I said, there are a lot of KU and Iowa State fans that are going to leave as soon as this game is over, and they're going to drink it up in the power and light, and they don't care that they didn't come to see game two. They bought the session because they had to buy the session to see game one. I said, there'll be plenty of seats. At the first TV timeout, 4 minutes into the second semifinal of the Big 12 tournament, my son and I went over, and, you know, there's some people at the top of the deal, and we just we just calmly, we don't run, we don't jog, we just simply walk right on down like those are our seats. Mm-hmm. Because ushers can't remember exactly who and everybody that they see. And so we went right down, and there was like three different rows of chairs, plenty of chairs. It wasn't like there was just two sitting there open mm-hmm. for me and my son. So we walked down there, and you know what? Here's the way I look at it. Worst thing that happens is they say, hey, you can't sit here. Go back to your original seat. So I'm not stealing anything because nobody's using it. Okay? All right?
And in that case, it's probably already been paid for and been used already during the day. So.
Right, it has. So him and I go down, and we get like five rows from midcourt. I mean, and this is just 4 minutes into the second semifinal. And we go down. There's a lady at the bottom of the steps, and she sees us. Whether or not she knows that we have seats there or we're, you know, borrowing them, you know, I use air quotes mm-hmm. when I say that, I don't know. But once we sat down, there are other people that we know did the same thing that were sitting in that area. Okay? We know this. And it is funny to people watch because I can tell some people because they make it obvious. They're looking around with a head mm-hmm. on a swivel. Like, you know they're guilty of something. They're guilty of sin. And I just try to act like, hey, been here, done that, you know, whatever. And so there was a couple of teenagers. They come down about probably 10 minutes after us. And they come down, and there are three or four rows in front of us. And then there is the premium, the high-priced seats that used to be media seats that Brett Yormark mm-hmm. changed into premium seats that people paid for, basically on the floor behind the media. Okay, but they're two rows of just folding chairs that are padded. That's all it is. Mm-hmm. But you're sitting on the floor, technically. And so there's a lady right in front of the little, what is it, push button cloth thing to keep you open it for anybody that goes down there or media, whatever. And so these two kids, there are seats in the very first row in front of this usher lady, all right? And I'm watching this, and they're kind of debating as they come down the steps what row they're going to sit in. And the one starts to go towards the first or second row, a few rows in front of us. The other decides, you know what, I'm all in. So he goes down, and the usher stepped aside like one step, and he somehow thinks he's going to go through a cloth that is buttoned across, and he starts to like go there and reach for the thing, and the lady stops the kid, and they're busted, and they both immediately just walk back up the steps and leave. And I'm like, you could have just walked three steps and she would have let you sit in the second row.
Yeah.
Amateurs. So those kids pushed it too far. They were like, I mean, come on, you were going to sit first or second row midcourt and you thought you were going to get the premium on the floor seats? Okay, you pushed it too far. I guess you got what you deserved. Nobody chewed him out. Lady just simply said, you are not allowed down here, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Now, here's the point I'm trying to make. Anybody that was in the arena paid money to be in the arena, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Anybody that goes to a Royals game has paid to get in the Royals game. Now, maybe you got comp tickets or something.
Got tickets somehow. They're in there.
Somehow they're in there. You didn't illegally trespass and go into the stadium. You had to go through the turnstiles. So you have paid for a ticket or have a ticket. You're legally allowed to be in the stadium. There is nothing illegal about going and sitting in somebody else's seat. That is not a crime, especially when nobody's using it. So the ushers are very laxed at Kauffman Stadium. They will let you pretty much, maybe they're aware, maybe they're not. Maybe they've been told, don't make a big stink about it. And nowadays, with how people react, it's probably best you just don't have a confrontation. But here's the thing. For those selfish, self-absorbed people that are watching on TV and don't go to the game and are mad that somebody's sitting in your seat, you should be thankful there's anybody there watching the Royals right now. The Royals shouldn't do anything about this. The Royals shouldn't complain about it. They shouldn't change their policy. They shouldn't tell the ushers to become the usher police. All right? And the actual fan that complains about it needs to just get a grip. Okay? Because that is ridiculous. That's called entitlement. And you may say, well, they paid for the seat. No, I get that. But here's the thing. If you're a true Royals fan and you paid money to support the Royals, shouldn't you be happy that there's anybody anywhere near your seat trying to cheer on the team? Right? And you know what? Yeah. When that person's there, they're buying concessions, more than likely. They paid to be in the game anyway. They're just upgrading their seat. And you know what? If it's a young kid, they may have a different seat that they've never sat in before and had a one-of-a-kind experience that may very well lead to the going, wow, you know, someday I'd love to sit in those seats when I get older. Or it could be an adult like Dusty or I sit in that seat and go, you know what? I think I might sign. This is a great view. I think I'm going to sign up for season tickets next year. You know what I'm saying? Or, you know what? I'm going to go on StubHub the next time I'm here, and I'm going to get tickets in this section instead of buying the GA for $6. Mm-hmm. Nobody thinks about those type of things. We're all about me, 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 me. And you may be listening and go, well, come on, man. You're making a big deal about this because they paid for the seat. Aren't they? Don't they have the right? Yeah, they have the right to their seat. But if they don't use it, what's the point? Your thoughts. If you saw somebody sitting in your seat, let's say you're a Spurs fan. Everybody knows that. Let's say you have season tickets at a Spurs game. You don't go to a Spurs game. You had a doctor's appointment. Who knows what happened? You had a hospital stay, and you're in the hospital, or you're at home, whatever the case may be. You're watching a Spurs game, and it comes on, and you see that somebody's sitting in your seat. Does that tick you off or upset you?
Here's what I'll say about
you. Might be a little. I think I might be like annoyed initially for a second, and I'll be like, whatever. The Royals clean the seats. The Royals clean the stadium.
Yeah.
Why do I care?
There's honestly, like, because kind of like what I've kind of gone through with family that have K-State tickets. I'll use that as my example. And as a Spurs fan, I would have the same thought process, right? Like, so if I have, I'm going to say if I have K-State tickets, right, for a K-State football game, there's a crowd shot painting where my seats are at, and there's somebody in my seats. As long as they're wearing purple, don't care if they're in my seats. If they're wearing crimson and blue, get them out of my seat. I mean, I'm being serious about that, right?
Like, yeah, or so, Sooner fans.
So if I'm a Spurs fan, I have season tickets, and they're wearing silver and black, don't care. If they're wearing blue and black,
okay,
Maverick fans, or, you know, blue and orange, get them out of my seat. If I'm going to complain about somebody being in my seat, it's going
to
be somebody that's wearing colors
that would make
the
sense
team
to
that
me.
I don't support.
That would make sense to me.
So that's kind of my philosophy on it. Okay. That would be my philosophy on it if I had season tickets
that
somewhere. And I'd be like, okay, if there's a Nebraska fan sitting in my seat, get them out of there. Yeah. If there's an Oklahoma fan sitting in my seat, get them out of there. Yeah, through the course of my life.
Would you actually call to complain?
I would not call and complain about it. I might call, like, if I have a buddy that has season tickets that I've gotten to know, I'd probably text him and be like, hey,
don't let anybody
get that
sit
person out of my seat. Yeah. If he's wearing Oklahoma gear,
report him,
you know, hey, tell him that's my seat, and that's for a K-State fan. If somebody else is going
to
use
that'd be a better way to do it.
Yeah, that's kind of my thought process. I'm guessing these people are seeing Royals fans in their seats.
I would imagine
who else. I mean, I don't know, maybe they're seeing
if it's
a
Yankee
fan
game, there'd be Yankee fans
it,
maybe but, in them. But you probably should
but
be
yeah,
at the Yankee
I mean,
game.
It's common practice if there's a lot of empty seats to move.
Absolutely.
I actually got a message from somebody who said, we got tickets all the way up in the top, so you're saying if we go down lower, they won't get mad at us? Probably not.
Probably not.
If you go to the right place, don't go like in the front row of behind home plate or something like that. They're not going to let you do that. But
by the way, just wait for the usher to turn their back. And you can walk right on down and pick a row. Here, I'm in this person that's listening. And just pick two seats that are open in a row. Pick a row that's mostly open. Yeah. That way, if somebody comes, and this has happened to me before, if somebody shows up and they say they got seats 3 and 4 and you're sitting in their seats 3 and 4, you just simply move down to 5 and 6. That's all you got to do. And in fact, when we were, and hold that thought, when we were at the last Royals game for the C. Ohtani and Trout, I had my family with me, and we had paid tickets, by the way. We were sitting 319. There's an 8-row section. It was in the shade, an evening game. And we the whole row was free. Available. So we just sat in the first 4 or 5 seats instead of seats 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, right? So technically we were sitting in somebody's seat 1 and 2. And there was a couple that showed up, and they were looking kind of down our row, and they may have had seats 1 and 2. And I could tell that they were probably going to be in that section. All they did is they looked to their left, and like there's 3 rows of available seats, and they just sat over to the left and didn't make a stink about nothing because they're like, well, actually, I'm a row or two closer and I can go to my left. So, yeah, as long as there's plenty of seats in the area that you want to go check out, more than likely, you're not going to probably get to go to the Diamond Club, you're not going to get to the Crown seats at Kauffman, but I'm going to tell you that I went to an afternoon game with a buddy of mine last year, okay? And we sat in 6 different spots during the game. We started in 319, Now remember, this is a colder day, school still in session, not a lot, probably 10,000 people at the game, right? We sat in 319, eight-row sections, actually in the shade, which is great during the heat, but when it's colder, it's kind of chilly. So then we went to the Blue Moon Bar area, and then we asked the usher person if we could go down and look at the fountain seats that they have. So we go to the fountain seats, and they let us through, and of course, they're not going to follow us and kick us out. So we go ahead, and there's a whole bunch of seats, that whole row of the fountain seats available. There's like one person sitting at 20 different fountain seats. So him and I, my buddy and I, we sit down there for two innings. Like, okay, that's cool. I said, do you want to go check out another perspective? Yeah, sure. So then we go to the left field, right above the bullpen or next to the bullpen, the visiting bullpen. We sit there for an inning or two. Then we go down the left field line down near the foul pole. So we're in foul territory. We sit there for a couple innings. Then we went down to the third base section, and we ended up being like six rows from the field, sat there for two or three innings. And then we got really adventurous. We went around, and I said, and we're spotting where the seats are available. Like you spot it out for a while, but to see, is anybody actually going to be there? Like, did they get up and get a beer, go to the bathroom? And you don't, by the way, wait till at least after the third inning to do this. Don't come. Some people show up late. You might have an issue. See, I'm a professional seat stealer is what I am. So then we go. I said, dude, there's seats like 15 rows behind home plate. There's like a whole row or two. Let's go down there. It wasn't crown seats, but close to that area. I said, why don't we just go and see if we can go down there? And this is like in the eighth inning. All right. We're late and people have already left the game in some situations already. I beat the traffic or whatever it might be. And we just, there wasn't even an usher to stop us at that situation. We went right on down and we sat like eight, nine rows behind home plate for the last two innings and got some great pictures of up close and personal, you know, Salvi going up to the plate. Nobody said a word to us. We never got a weird look from any usher. Maybe they didn't even realize we did what we did. I'm going to tell you this right now. Don't sit here and tell everybody Wade Gershner sent you. All right. All right. I didn't send you. This is on your own thing. But you got to be smart about it. You just don't run down there. Okay. Oh, bottom of the first inning. I'm going to go run down there and take a crown seat. No, that ain't going to work, people. That ain't going to work. And it only works when there's lots of seats available. If you go to a stadium that is pretty much sold out, you should sit in your seat and not even try it. That would be my advice. Until maybe you've seen a whole bunch of people leave a certain area and you know they're leaving, yeah, like they got their purses. Yeah.
When it's
a seventh
packed,
inning
when
stretch.
They're leaving, that you can get
right.
Closer.
Then you might be able to get closer. We went to a Rangers game a couple summers ago. My son had a tournament down there and we went to the new park there and you've been there. And we were sitting in the left field side with seats and you actually can't see the left corner of the outfield from the seats, which is stupid for a $1 billion stadium.
So
I went walking. I like checking out ballparks. So I asked if my family wanted to walk around everything, and we did when we first got there. So they didn't want to do it again. I was like, I want to check this out. And plus, I wanted to see what beers were available. So I go and I walk around, and I see the broadcast booth that they have that's really cool that you can see from the concourse. And then I step into the hallway, and it's behind home plate, but there's a good 50 rows, behind home plate, whatever it is. And I look, and there's not an usher right there. And I decide, and there's a whole bunch of seats available. The Rangers weren't very good at the time. I forgot who they were playing. Or the Mariners, I think. And so I just walked down about 10 rows. I found a spot by myself, and I started videoing the game, and I started videoing right when Jonah Heim hit a home run, which was unbelievably awesome. And I sat there for an inning while my family hung out where they were, and then I went back around. I left my seat. I went all the way around. I sat back in the seat that I paid for. Nobody seemed to care at all. I've gone to Chiefs games. Chiefs games now probably harder, but I've done it where I've sat upper level when it was super cold and I saw beer freeze in front of me literally on the ground, and we were on the shaded side, de-thawed in the merchandise store, took our socks off, boots off like many other people because it was so cold. We then went to the sunny side in the second half because Bronco fans were leaving because we were probably kicking their butt. And that's how Bronco fans are. They leave early when their team doesn't do well. Of course, lots of people do. I'm just taking a shot at the Broncos because I don't like them. So we go over and we sat about 20 rows from midfield. We went down there because a lot of people left because why? It was cold. Nobody stopped us. And I got to feel what it was like how physical the game was. That's the closest I ever sat to an NFL game ever was that situation. and nobody said said anything about it. So, yeah, you can move seats. Nobody's going to throw you in jail for it. The worst thing that can happen is they're going to say, hey, do you have a stub, or do you have... You know what makes it easier to do now? Since it's on the phone, you can sit here and act like you can't... Your phone isn't working to pull it up, and they usually will be like, okay. Because, you know, that's one good thing about digital tickets. The hard ticket, you had to show.
Yeah.
Now, you can be like, oh, my phone had to reboot. My phone's not working. You stand there, and the usher's like, I got enough things to worry about. Just... whatever, go. I don't need to deal with this. And the last thing the ushers want to do is get in a confrontation with anybody.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying you go down and steal a paid man's seat that he's using as soon as he goes to the bathroom. And then you fight him over it when he comes back. That's not what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm saying you just, you know, you pay attention. If you want to check out a different perspective and give you an idea that down the line you want to buy a better seat in that area that costs more, but it's worth it because you've actually had a chance to sit for a couple innings, and nobody's been there the whole game, or they're not there at all, or whole area's open, nobody's going to say, hardly anybody's going to do anything. Nobody rats you out around you, at least not me, when I've done it. Mm. Nobody around me like, oh my God, I'm the usher police the second, and I'm going to tell the usher people that you can't be here. I know you're not. No, nobody rats anybody out. They're all there to have a good time. As long as you don't infringe on them, they don't care. So... yeah, it's not that difficult to do. Now, when I was a teenager, I was scared to death to ever do that because I rarely got to go to games.
Yeah.
As I gotten older, it's like, listen, ain't a lot of people here. If you're gonna bust my chops for sitting in somebody's seat that nobody's even using, then why am I gonna come back here? I'm paying $15 for a beer, paying $10 for Dippin' Dots for my kids, and I paid for my ticket. And yes, it's not the seat I paid for. I get that. At the same time, are you really going to make a deal about these 50 seats that nobody's sitting in, and you're going to say, I got to go back over here? Okay, then you're – and I know somebody may listen to that and go, well, you're not really sitting where you're supposed to sit, so really you should go back to where you're sitting. And I agree that you're technically right. If somebody said – listen, somebody came up to me and said, hey, these are not your seats, are they? I'd be like – I just kind of put my head down and go, no, and I'd go back up there. I would. No big deal. I wouldn't be like a jerk about it. Like, well, there's nobody else sitting here. Why can't I sit here? I wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
I'd be like, no, okay, yep, okay, fine. You don't want me to be here. That's cool. That's just my look at it, because there are plenty of seats available at A's games, Royals games, and the Big 12 tournament, the second game that I was at. And people do this all the time. And as long as nobody is actually, you know, paid the seat and is using it, and you're trying to steal it when they went to go get a beer, and by the way, you're going to have a problem when they come back down to their seat and you're sitting in it,
mm-hmm.
They're going to tell you to move, or they're going to know what you're doing, and you just simply get up and move, and that's it. But I wouldn't even do that part.
Yeah, that tweet that you sent out, it all started with somebody tweeting about the Royals ushers kicking some kids out of the lower bowl, right? Like, that was kind of a quote tweet of that tweet, right? So that was the game on Tuesday night, right? So there must have been something going on within their ushers, because I actually, you know, you put that on Twitter about the season ticket holder, which was a retweet of the, mm-hmm. Hey, some kids got kicked out of the lower bowl. Nobody's there. You should just be happy that, like, 80% of the stadium's empty.
Yeah.
Be happy. People want to sit there and just be part of it. Well, I had a person who was at that game that night too, right, and sent a message to me and said, I got kicked out of sitting in 100 seats that he wasn't supposed to be in. He's like an usher came up and said, these are premium seats, you can't sit here, those aren't your seats. And then he's like, and then I literally asked him, I said, is there anywhere that I can sit around here that you don't check the ticket? And the usher said no at first, and then 5 seconds later said, you can sit up there in 200. So literally five rows up, this usher let him sit there.
Yeah.
But not in the 100 section.
Interesting.
So I think there's something going on that night with ushers.
There had
been. Maybe there was like, be on alert and just don't let people sit where they're not supposed to sit.
Maybe so.
Because I've been there. Like, I remember, not this year, but last year when we did the bus trip, right? You and I and Jason kind of moved around a little bit, right?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And so, but there was a nice usher lady there that day that actually let us sit in a spot that is actually premium.
Yes, she did.
Up at the Rivals Bar, right? Because we're like, we kind of want to see what the vantage point is like here.
Yep.
Can we do that? And she's like, yeah, you can do it for an inning, and let us sit there.
Yeah.
And we went about our way after and thanked her for it and said, hey, appreciate you letting us do that, and then just moved on, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's some ushers that are going to be nice about it. And
mm-hmm.
maybe if I'm just like, hey, I just want a different vantage point, can I sit here for an inning?
Right.
If they're going to give you some fluff about it or whatever.
Yeah.
And so it's weird because – the same night the kids were kicked out of that spot, he messaged me. He's like, yeah, dude, I tried to sit in 100 and they booted me.
That's weird. I mean,
but five rows up in 200 section, I could sit there and they didn't have a problem.
So you're taking somebody else's seat in 200. Yeah. But 100 is different.
Because 100 is premium seats, quote unquote, is what he was told.
That's just ridiculous. And listen, if I'm an usher, the last thing I want to do is check everybody, because here's the thing. If you don't know for sure that somebody's doing that, you're not going to even question somebody because you're going to come across bad if it is a person that actually sits there.
Sometimes I'll just if there's
I've been there.
Yeah, well, also if there's an empty row or something, I might just pull my ticket out and look at it while I'm looking at it.
Yes.
And just sit down. Because then you people are like, oh, well, he's got a ticket. He knows the number he's supposed to sit in.
Right.
Look at your phone oh, yeah, here we go. This is where I'm at.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing is if you treat
people. You can't just be looking around and be like, can I sit here?
And then you start and you're sprinting to the seat. You're kind of making it pretty obvious. There's a way to be a little more subtle about it. And you made a good point about the Royals bus trip because we were in that Blue Moon Bar. And I remember just asking a lady, hey, is it okay? Because I saw there was a lot of seats available right there. Mm-hmm. I said, is it okay if we could check this out? And she just looked to the right, I think. And she said, no, that'd be okay for an inning. And we're fine. And we didn't abuse it. We didn't try to make it two, like some people would.
Yeah.
And I think she might have let us sit there for longer. And we got up and we left. We did one inning and we moved. And to me, that's how you should approach it. Allow somebody to check something out new. Like I said, my buddy and I, we got to go to the fountain seats there and check it out. Now, did we abuse that slightly? Well, nobody was sitting in them, so we sat there for an inning or two. Then we moved on, and we said we just wanted to go down and look at them, and nobody came rushing after us, okay, you got to leave now. I told you could just look at these. The ushers, the last thing they want to do is have a confrontation, I would imagine, and they don't want to become the police, per se. And then also with the way things are nowadays, you don't know how people are going to react when you do with conflict and confrontation. Yeah. And so just, do it the right way, and it'll be fine. And people have been doing this for years upon years. And nobody, I'm not going to say nobody, but I think maybe once somebody told me, you can't sit here. I'm like, yeah, okay, I tried.
Yeah.
I guess I look at it as, it sounds really weird, but when I was younger, I was like any other young boy. I was scared to ask a girl out to the prom or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And now I'm older. I'm like, why? The worst thing she could have done is said no or kick me in the nuts. And you know what? If that happened, I'd eventually catch my breath and get my octave back, and I'd be okay. And if not, worst thing that happens, I speak in a high voice for the rest of my life, and I might have made money that way. I don't know. The worst thing that was going to happen was I was going to get no, or I was going to get kicked in the, you know what? That's about the only thing I thought was going to happen. And honestly, I didn't really think the kick was going to happen.
Yeah.
So I was just worried about rejection. But that's all you're worried about. But when you get older, you're like, you know what? So what if I try to go sit in a seat there and they tell me I can't? Okay, well, they're not kicking me out of the ballpark for doing that.
Yeah.
So,
everybody's going to have
that personal
fear of rejection.
Right?
Like, everybody's got a different personality probably on that. But I was at K-State KU football game. I got a ticket last minute in Lawrence, right? And I was sitting among KU fans, and I'm like, I don't want to be here anymore. So I went over to the K-State section. It was fairly full, right? But I asked the dude, I was like, hey, I'm over there stuck in the KU section. Is there an open spot here? Yeah.
Right.
So I just stayed there, right? There was no ushers telling me I couldn't be there, obviously.
Right.
But so, yeah, I mean, I've moved seats before and never really had any major issues. Yeah, you can't go, don't go premium or try to get courtside.
That's where you're pushing it too far.
Like premium. Now, I'm not talking 100 section. Yeah. I'm talking Diamond Club.
Yeah.
Don't try to get courtside tickets if you don't have a ticket there.
Yeah, you're not getting into craft and draft probably, and you're not getting into you can get in craft and draft before the game starts, and they'll show you around, let you walk around, whatever else. Craft and draft probably not able to sneak in and sit down in the middle of the game and
anything kind of out there.
Diamond
like
Club,
Petsy
Crown,
Porch, Fountain Club anymore. You can't even get out into those you used to be able to.
Blue Moon Bar seating action, but. You know, the 200s, the second level, I still think the upper part, I think the lower level you still can down the right field, left field line, third base and first base side. It depends on the night. Probably depends on the ushers and everything else. So, yeah, but that's interesting. Maybe they're cracking down on it. I don't
Who
know.
Knows?
And if they are, I think they're really sending a horrible message
too. When there's nobody in the stadium, that's not
We want you to help pay for a brand new stadium, and we're going
to
make your life a living hell when you actually try to move up a few rows. Okay, that makes sense. Acacia Executive Board has approved some postseason changes for football and baseball. Yesterday, this was announced. The biggest change will come in 2024, so not this year, but next year, for state football championship games. There will be three sites hosting three games each, with one to be played on Friday, November 29th, and two on Saturday, November 30th, at each location. 6A, 5A, and 4A would play games at one location. 3, 2, and 1A championship games would be at another location. 8-man D1, 8-man D2, and 6-man championship games would be at a third location. Host sites have not yet been determined in regards to this new setup by Acacia. Executive Director Bill Faflick said, and I quote, "Acacia is at a point where we want to look at what combining sites in a few of our championships would look like. We believe it can add to the student and fan experience. Kansas has a rich tradition of great community support where we host championships. We do not anticipate that changing. It will just look slightly different depending on the year and selection of hosts." So let's start with that, and then we'll get to the baseball one. I think it's a good idea. I am not one of those people, maybe I'm in the minority, I am not one of those people that thinks we need to have all of them in one spot. I don't think we need all the state football games in one spot. I don't think we need all the state basketball games in one spot. Now, selfishly, as a media person, I should say that. But as a fan, I don't like it. Because, one, you're taking away a whole bunch of economic opportunities for a whole bunch of towns and cities in this state that rely on it or really like to have it. And now, granted, if we started out at the very beginning of time and it was at one site, yeah, Nobody would know. But when you've already established this for many years, you know, I'm okay with having different sites across the state. It's really not that huge a deal to me personally. I understand it. If we can get people to go, you know, stay at hotels and go to Dodge or Hayes or Great Bend or Salina or Topeka or Emporia or Wichita or Newton, I'm all for that. You know, spread the wealth. I'm cool with that. The biggest problem I have with football is that all the games are played at the exact same time. That's my problem. And it's not necessarily the site. It's about, and I know you could argue that kind of ties together, but you could have these separate sites and you could stagger times at least for some of these games. You could have at 1, 4, and 7 and still keep your individual sites. And there might be two games or three games at the same time instead of all of them. Yes. Or you do a two-day thing to where only two games will be going on at once. You know, listen, the National Football League has games on going on at all at once, right? We know this. So I think this is interesting because, to me, I think this is kind of a middle ground run here by Acacia, what they're doing. I think it makes some sense. I have no problem with this idea myself. I do like spreading over 2 days instead of trying to do all one day. It also means that you can, you know, whether you're a fan and you have people in a couple different state title games relation, whether you're just simply a fan and want to go to more than one state championship football game. And right now, the current system, you can't do that at all unless you go to 8-man, you know, on the, what is it, the week before?
You go it's the same week or, now. Yeah, it has been week. For the last 5 or 6 years.
So probably. You possibly could go to an 8-man game and catch part of another one, whatever.
Yeah.
But... So this is what they're going to do. 6A, 5A, and 4A will be at one site. And so they'll do, what did they say, one game on a Friday?
Yeah.
And then so Friday night, it'll be a Friday night game, I would imagine. I would hope. And then Saturday, they'll probably be staggered. I don't know if it'll be like 1 and 4, 4 and 7, 3 and 7, noon and 4. Who knows? Who knows what they're going to do? We already have a doubleheader at Newton for the 8-man championship games. So what is it, 11 and 3?
11 and 3, yeah.
11 and 3. We do a doubleheader at the 8-man All-Star games. 10 and 1:30, or you know, something like that.
Yeah.
Sometimes it ends up being 10 and 2, and it can be done. It's been done many times before. So, let's talk about this for a second. So, I saw somebody put out there, and this is somebody I don't think really follows high school sports that well, that said, "Well, I would think the first call is you got to call KU and K-State to host these title games for 6A, 5A, and 4A. And I mean it like, dude, you are a college fan that doesn't know a lot about high school sports. So just really stay out of what you don't know is what I want to say. Okay? No. I would be stunned if Acacia put three state football title games at Bill Snyder Family Stadium or at Memorial Stadium in Lawrence. First of all, you have conflict. You have scheduling conflicts with K-State and KU, and we have found out over time that KU and K-State And obviously, Fort Hays State is the prime example. They do not want to be hosting these events. They've got many other fish in the sea. Their top priority is their college or university, as it should be. It is sometimes just a pain in the butt to host some of these things. Manhattan has gone south when it goes to hosting the state basketball championship games, tournament games. I experienced this a couple years ago. I was amazed at how it was so much different than what it was when I first moved here. They don't even have the partitions up to make it more of a homey situation. They didn't even have stats for the media people that they would run like they used to do. There was no music playing. They didn't even have music queued up or anything on the sound system. If you had a band, if your band didn't make it for the first day of the tournament, it was just dead, completely dead. You're having a state tournament game and a facility that's way too big. There's no need to do it. There's no need to have state championship football games at Arrowhead. You're not going to have 80,000 people there for the state school football title game. So, you know, Fort Hays State, you know, Fort Hays was a good environment for state basketball. I didn't have a real big problem with that. I hear Dodge is amazing and awesome. Smaller venue, right? Eight-man football, I think Newton's fine. Dodge City might go for this to try to host these. Smaller community would probably make some sense, or a smaller stadium. The point I'm trying to make is you don't need to have state. I know Nebraska has them at UNL. I get that. And it works, and they have them all at one place for basketball. And that's fine. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. But what I'm saying is, we don't need to. Manhattan, people in Manhattan and Lawrence benefit from college games and the businesses, economy wise, they make a whole bunch of money. Why don't you take care of the other towns? Topeka doesn't have a professional sports franchise, right? There's like hockey, minor league hockey. Wichita does not have a professional sports franchise other than some semi-pro minor league hockey, whatever. They can host. I have no problem. Salina. I mean, they have an arena football team. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, let Salina host. Dodge City host. You know, if Hayes wants to host. But we don't have to. Kansas City, Lawrence, and Manhattan don't have to host these things. And they're not going to lose any sleep or cry if they don't get them. In fact, I don't even think they would even bid for them.
No,
you're never going to. KU's not going to sit here and go, yeah, let's have a state championship basketball game at Allen Fieldhouse. That's not going to happen.
Logistically, it's never going to happen time-wise.
No.
Where the games are at.
Right.
Because KU and K-State aren't going to like go into every year and commit to this and say, yeah, we'll give up a home game that weekend every year.
Yeah. Or rearrange our schedule for a high school
game. Yeah. And then half the time, I would say maybe probably about 50% of the time, KU and K-State are playing on that Saturday.
Absolutely.
Of state championship weekend. I've complained about it a lot. It's like state championship weekend. Why are you scheduling K-State?
No, they don't.
Into their schedule.
If they cared, they wouldn't schedule football games on Friday night
during
the regular season.
They don't care about that. And they don't care about hosting a high school state championship game in the state of Kansas either.
And I'm not saying they should either.
Yeah, Bill Snyder Family Stadium or Memorial Stadium. You don't need 50,000 seats for...
No.
Even the best 6A game that could ever possibly happen.
No, you don't.
You don't. And so, but logistically, it doesn't even work anyway because they're bound to have a home game at those places on this day.
So, having said that, so that we got that out of the way, I want to explain to people because Fort Hays State, basically, they're like, yeah, we'll host. This is how it's been in the past. We'll host, but if we're going to have a chance to host regionals, then we're kicking you to the side if we have a chance. And then KU would have to scramble. Dodge City loves to have it. So, they finally figured it out that, hey, let's not do this stuff at Hays. Because Hayes don't really.
Hayes was glad to get rid of it.
Yes, they were.
That's pretty clear.
I can assure you of that. I know somebody used to work at Hayes and told me that they would have loved to have given it up a decade earlier. So 6A, 5A, 4A, we don't know where the sites are going to be. Here's my prediction. I think it's an obvious one. I think Topeka, Homer Park, hosted.
Yeah.
Because I'll give you many reasons why. First of all, it's a pretty good sized city, Topeka. Plenty of hotels. These are the biggest three classes in the state, right? So Topeka has plenty of hotels. They have tons of hotels. They have plenty of restaurants, okay? And where's Keisha's headquarters?
Topeka.
So to me, I think it's a no-brainer. It's Topeka.
Yeah, state capital, Keisha headquarters, all the stuff you said. Like, there's, I think one of the three sites is going to be Topeka.
Yeah, absolutely. And why would it not be 6-4 and 5A? Somebody said Sporting KC Park or whatever. Yeah, that'd be cool. That's a smaller stadium. Still too big. But I don't think that's happening. Wichita, I mean, where are you going to have in Wichita?
Yeah, you're going to have to do...
Yeah, they don't have a college football program for crying out loud. So I think Topeka is the no-brainer for 6-5-4A. Would you agree?
Yeah.
Okay, 3-2-1A. My guess for 3-2-1A would be Salina.
Yeah, I struggle to see it being anywhere else.
Or Hutch.
Yeah.
There's a chance Hutch.
There's a chance.
But I'd say Solana.
I think based on size of schools that are playing there, that's going to be the spot.
Is there some?
Yeah, Hutch would be a good second option, I feel like.
Yeah, I agree with that. Is there anybody? Is there a town we're missing out here for 6A through 1A that should be hosting? Hayes, I don't think, wants to be hosting.
I mean, Hayes would actually be at the top of my list for it, right?
It
like
there,
even above Salina, just based on the stadium that they would play in and what they would do there.
Hayes, Salina, but, Hutch?
Yeah, I would put it in that order is how I'd do it if I was choosing and if I had my first choice of where I would have it.
Would be Hayes.
But I don't think Hayes.
I don't think they want that bad.
Even if they did want it, I think Case is probably going to get sour on him pretty fast and be like, nah, we're not going to commit to that. Let's do Salina. And it's centrally located to Salina, too.
So Salina doesn't have to worry about, Case doesn't worry about Salina bumping him for some kind of college playoff game or something.
Yeah.
I mean, there's Pittsburgh State way in the corner of the state.
I thought about Pitt, but it's just facility. Like, I don't know if they'll send all those bigger. Pitt would be for, I wouldn't say 3-2-1.
No,
Pitt would be for
4-5. I agree. And
I don't know if they'll send all those schools down there.
And the same thing would apply for Hayes as it does for Pitt State, and that is that they have a chance to play, playoff game.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're not going to give that up, or next thing you know, Keisha's got to suddenly adjust to a plan B.
Yeah.
And if you're Keisha, the last thing you want to do is deal with what you had to do with Hayes multiple times. Let's go ahead and have our sights to where we know they're locked in and there's no way we can get bumped. That would be the smart thing to do.
College fields are fun, but these options that you can create without having to play at a college field just make it easier for everybody to deal with.
Agreed.
So that's why Helmer Park, Salina Stadium would be perfect spots.
Okay, so we believe that Topeka is going to host 6-5-4A. We don't think that's we think that's a no-brainer. We may be wrong. Maybe somebody mentioned Sporting KC Park there in Kansas City, Kansas. Maybe that would be an option. Maybe somehow somewhere they do something Wichita. But we think Topeka is pretty much going to be that. 3-2-1A, we all agree that Salina is probably going to be the place, but it could be maybe possibly Hutch. Maybe it could be Hayes. Okay, now let's move on down to 8-man D1, 8-man D2, and 6-man. Everybody automatically thinks it'll be a Newton. I'm telling you that I am praying that it's not Newton. Now, that's not because I don't like people in Newton. Okay,
I got family in Newton.
Yeah, it's because the Newton setup for the media in particular sucks. There's no other way to explain it. I don't know how many times that we've been there covering an 8-man title game where they tell us to sit in the very back of the booth where we can't even see the scoreboard and have newspaper people at the very front row, and they can wait till the end of the game to write their story and post it. We have to, in present time, live, play-by-play, we need to know what time is on the scoreboard and what the score is. And I've been at a couple times over the years. Maybe it's gotten better because I haven't been there for a while, but a few times I was there, I'm like, oh, yeah, by the way, the phone lines are right here, too. I was like, listen, no, I'm not sitting back there because I can't see the scoreboard. I have to see the scoreboard. That's like, hello, number one, when you listen to a radio broadcast, what's the score? If I can't see the scoreboard and what's the time, how the heck can I call the game?
Yeah.
Okay? So, and by the way, if you're a newspaper writer, you can actually get up, walk, and look if you had to because you're not live on the air. So that always infuriated me and was silly and dumb. And all radio people were talking about this. It's not just us complaining about it. And I remember once I'm like, listen, I'm sitting on the front row, and if you have a problem with it, then you're going to kick me out because anybody will tell you, you have to see the scoreboard. Hello. And there, trust me, you wouldn't be throwing anybody out because all the other radio brethren, we'd outnumber them. And that's not to say we want confrontation. It's just saying it's common sense. Hello. So Newton's not a great setup unless they clear up all that. I don't know what Dodge Cities would be for football, but I know that you are a big proponent for Dodge City hosting these games.
Yeah. Give me a vote of where I want to go for any state tournament, football game, whatever it is. I'm putting Dodge City at the top. Like, they treat you like kings, not just me. I'm not talking as a media person. I'm talking about everybody that goes there. They wanted to be a part of this really badly, and they got the opportunity to do it, and they're knocking it out of the park. The only downfall of Dodge City is location. I mean, that's going to be obvious. Six-man football is still perfect for Dodge City because there are so many teams out west that are playing six-man football. And so that's a great spot for it. And, hey, let's go ahead and add the eight-man games there. They're building a new press box at Dodge City High School. I've seen the pictures of the construction. This thing is huge. And it's going to accommodate no matter who is there media-wise. And so, yeah, they're talking about Dodge City wants to be a part of this. Obviously, they have been before six-man was sanctioned by Keisha and did the six-man championship there as well afterwards. And I think that this is just an outstanding spot for it. I did have somebody send me a message yesterday that said, I wish we could do this on a real eight-man field somewhere in the middle of the state. And I'm like, it's a good theory.
Yeah.
Can't do it. K Acacia would have to hire out staff. If you're going to have three games at one site, Acacia's going to have to hire out staff. You're not going to put that on a small town AD to get a PA guy, ticket takers, all the things that Acacia needs to do game day operation wise, and have it at an 8-man field at a small school. It's just, that was my explanation of I don't, and it's Thanksgiving weekend too.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to ask probably at least 10 members of your community, don't do anything. If our team's not playing in this game, don't do anything Thanksgiving weekend. We need you here. And that's just not going to go over. And Casey's not going to spend the money to hire that out. All these places that we're talking about have either a rec commission or a university athletic department, right, that has built-in staff for game day operations. And Dodge City is, I'm going to tell you right now, Dodge City High School is at the top of that list, too, because they have kids in classes, and Dodge City Community College helps out with that, too, with some of the things that they do. And so I would love it if it was on an actual 8-man field somewhere and you didn't have to like reconfigure a field. But Dodge City is going to be at the top of my list for anything. So it's definitely at the top of my list for this.
Wouldn't you say that Acacia saves money by doing this?
Absolutely.
Because you don't have to have staff at 9 different sites.
Yeah, I
guess it'd be 7 different sites, right?
And I don't know what the cost of it is to rent the facilities to
for
do
a full,
things
for 2 days.
For 2 days.
Yeah.
And then also whatever, there may be some trade out by saying, hey, we'll promote your rec commission in our programs and things like that if you give us the facility you use. I don't know how all that works. Mm-hmm. But I do know that Case is not going to spend a lot of money to hire people out to do their stuff.
I agree.
No matter where they're at.
So that's the football. That won't be for until 2024. And it only affects state championship games. So if your team never makes it, you got nothing to worry about. Sounds bad, but in baseball,
truth hurts sometimes.
Truth hurts, yeah. In baseball, at the 3A and 2-1A level, to help with pitcher availability, the regional seeding date has been moved up to Saturday to accommodate for a full week to play the tournament. First round games of regionals will be played on Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday, with semifinals and finals on either Monday or Wednesday of the following week. For more on these changes and others, you can find the story on our website, ncksports.com. A couple quick things about the baseball. I saw a colleague of ours complaining about it.
I didn't understand that.
I didn't
engage with it either.
I don't think he really truly understands baseball in regards to pitch counts and the rules. Because if he did, he would know this is a good thing.
Yes.
Unless he thinks that the school he covers has just a plethora of pitchers. Because most mid-sized small schools don't have enough pitching hardly to get through any tournament, let alone situations like this.
Yeah.
This is a bad thing for teams that have super depth with their pitching staff, because it's kind of like Major League Baseball. You get to a 5-game series, you'll never see the fifth or fourth starter, probably, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the fourth. Major regular season, you see 5, 6, 7, 8 different starters. So you condense it to your best 2 or 3 starting pitchers. That's how it works, right? So the team that has the studs, 2 or 3 studs, are going to be better off in a short series than a team that, we got 5 good starters, but not a great one. So in that case, if there's a high school, I will tell you, I don't think there's many high school baseball teams at the 3A, 2A, 1A level that have more than 2 really good starting pitchers.
No.
So if you want higher quality baseball for regionals, this is a great idea. And I'm going to tell you right now, coaches have asked for it. So when there's a radio guy saying that he doesn't think this is a good idea, I don't think he's talked to a baseball coach. Because baseball coaches will tell you, I may have one ace, if I'm lucky, and then it's a major fall off. Or I've got an ace, I got a decent guy, and then they're a major fall off. And what happens is when you use up your pitchers earlier in the tournament, sometimes what happens is you cost yourself the season by saving your best pitcher to not pitch the first game, like Ellsworth did a few years ago, and lose the first game and never get to use him. This alleviates that problem for coaches. So now, this does help teams that have a stud or 2 studs. There's no question. But here's my thing. Do you want to go, if you're a real baseball fan, do you want to go to a regional game and have it decided by the 4th best pitcher on each team because the 3 best ones are out of pitching, out of innings or pitches? Actually, it's pitches. Do you want to, No. You want to see the best beat the best. And so this is, I think, a tremendous idea. And I can tell you right now, speaking with a few coaches I know, they like it. In fact, they recommended it. So I don't think some radio guy who doesn't really follow baseball that closely, or maybe just doesn't understand, needs to educate themselves a little bit more on pitchers don't grow on trees at schools. And we're talking 3A, 2A, 1A. This ain't 4, 5, 6A either. focus on that as well.
Yeah. It's kind of the same type of conversation I had with Coach Cox about off the air about would you be cool with having more than 20 games, right? And doing more games during the week.
Because
it's the same concept.
Do.
That's why 3 and 2-1A are doing it like this, but 5A and 6A don't have to worry. 4A don't have to worry. They've got enough pitchers it's not an issue, right?
And
enough kids on their team that they can play those things and not run out of pitch counts. So that's what this is all about. And 100% agree with it. I mean, you've been around it more than I have because your oldest plays, but and you've coached baseball and stuff like that too, and understand what pitch count means and what you have to do to try to keep within the limits that they have put on you, and Cage has put on some fairly strict limits, and they're not going to go the other way. If they're going to get more limits, it's going to be less pitches.
Right.
So the opportunity that you have here is to send out your ace and not have to worry about that in the first game, right? Like, you can go out and say, hey, we have to win this game. I'm sending my ace out if there's any doubt at all. Now, if it's a 1-8 matchup, I don't care. You know, I'll probably pitch my second or third guy. We'll make it through, put the ace out whenever I need to and go forward. But even your second or third guy, you could put your second guy twice in a row and use your ace for the championship, right? There's so many things you can do here.
More flexibility.
That you don't have to worry about pitch count if you have two pitchers.
Right. I agree. I love it. I honestly love it. I can't understand how somebody cannot like it. Unless they don't know what's really going on.
Yeah.
That's how I look at it there. So those are the changes. Read about at ncksports.com. I'm sure we'll talk more about it once they determine the sites, and we'll find out that it's going to be in Kansas City and completely different sites than we talked about. I don't know. I think the eight-man idea of having an eight-man field would be – I like the idea in theory as well. I love it, actually.
Oh, yeah. I do, too.
And if you could find one that had turf, that'd be really cool. And I think there's a I might be a little more optimistic about that than you, that I think if you found the right town – that had the right facility, and maybe there isn't one there, but I think there's a possibility that somebody would be able to do it. But you know, how long would they be able to keep it going is my question. Listen, we see it up close and personal. You know, we have 2 8-man games in a day every year, once a year, which is what state championship games are, once a year, and that'd be 2 games, Division One, Division Two, that they have in Newton. So it's really a similar situation. Mm-hmm. And we see how hard it is to get people. We got a lot of older people carrying a lot of the weight for the 8-man All-Star games that at some point are going to retire, want to move and go somewhere on a beach, or they might die. And I'm just being honest. And some of them have health issues that shouldn't even be involved, but do it for the love, or they feel like they have to because other people don't step up. So that is a challenge every year for the 8-man All-Star Games. It'll be a challenge for anybody hosting the 8-man Division 1 and 2 state title games if you were going to. And I think it's even a challenge bigger than small schools sometimes, too, to be honest with you. But I think it's a great idea in theory. I would love to see it myself.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I could get into a very long conversation, so I'll just cut it there.
Sure. I can just tell you that there was one position that they were trying to get somebody to do for the 8-man All-Star Games, and I was told they asked about 15 people.
Yeah.
And then had to go back to somebody that, honestly, they shouldn't have to be asked. They shouldn't. They've done their time. They shouldn't have to do it anymore. And you know what they do? They step up and they do it. And kudos to that person. You and I know who it is.
Yes.
NHL Stanley Cup, well, that's all over and everything. Kraken did not win it all, unfortunately. But the draft took place last night, number one pick.
And with the first overall selection in the 2023 NHL draft, the Chicago Blackhawks are very proud to select from the Regina Pats, the Western Hockey League, Connor Bedard.
What did he say?
Regina Pats.
Oh, okay. just want to make sure I heard that right. I thought my ears were deceiving me. Anywho, Connor Bedard is the number one pick, a native of North Vancouver. He's 17-year-old, a generational talent because of his shooting ability and puck possession skills. Number one pick, but I don't care about that. The 20th overall pick of the first round went to the Seattle Kraken. They selected who is soon to be the Rookie of the Year. In Edward Sale, he's a left winger from the Czech Republic, and I appreciate he has a pronounceable name for me. He's 18 years old. Colorado, the Avalanche, if you're curious, had 2 picks in the first round. Number 27 took Calum Ritchie, a center from Oshawa, 18 years old. And then the Colorado Avalanche at 31 took Mikhail Gorbachev, former leader of Russia. Sorry, wrong one. Mikhail Guliyev, I think I nailed it, a defenseman. He's 18 years old from Russia. So young people getting drafted for the hockey. Very young.
I mean, I thought somebody from Kansas was going to get picked. I was disappointed.
We have a plethora of hockey talent in North Central Kansas. I am stunned that nobody got drafted on that one. Major League Baseball, there's talk about shortening the regular season from 162 to 154 games, and I don't even need to know the reasons. I'm all for it. But the reasoning is that they've just had a series with the Cubs and the Cardinals in London. It went over well. And they are wanting to have more international games like that, not to start franchises across the world, but to just, you know, show off the sport. It's smart. To me, it's brilliant. You know, that's something baseball maybe got right for once. The NFL does it with games. We got the Chiefs and the Dolphins of Frankfurt, Germany. But football, American football, is not worldwide universally played by everybody. Soccer is the Europe sport, and we now soccer is becoming more prevalent in the United States of America. But baseball is a global sport in regards to it is big in Latin America, South America. It is big in other countries across the world, although it could grow into other countries. And that's part of the thinking when you have baseball games in London and maybe other places, okay? And so the thought process, Rob Manfred, I don't think has been a great commissioner, but I do agree with him on this, that the more international play that they can have, where they can maybe do, you know, maybe everybody plays a series overseas. I don't know how they're going to do it. But a little international play, that requires more travel. You need some scheduling quirks to make it work, right? So we need a little flexibility in the schedule. We take 8 games off. We go 162, 154. I'm all for it. I'm cool with it because you're marketing the game, you're promoting the game on a global level, and it makes sense. Now, you may not like it as, oh, we lost 3 home games. We lost a 3-game home series. Well, what's going to happen is everybody's going to lose a home series, and they're going to lose a road series probably, and that gets you down from 162 to 154. And by the way, there are many, 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 many years baseball had 154 games, okay? Mm-hmm. They went to 162, just more of a scheduling thing and everything else to make it a little bit easier with when they added teams and this and that. And some people argue that, you know, when you have all these records being broken and it takes you 8 more games than back in the day, that they should be have an asterisk as well, which I don't disagree. If it takes you 8 more games to get there, maybe you should consider that that is a, you know, it is a single season record, but if you got 8 more games to get the record, it's easier to get the record. I think the NFL is a little bit tricky now with an extra game, 17 games versus a guy that went 16 games. I mean, there's a big advantage to breaking records. So perhaps, I don't know if there's an asterisk or it's just simply noted, whatever the case may be. Although technically you could argue, listen, if this guy hit so many home runs and this guy hit so many home runs back in a 154-game schedule, that really doesn't tell the whole story. How many games did they actually play in? You know, did Aaron Judge play in 148 games and Babe Ruth play in 140? And Babe hit just as many as Aaron Judge? Or did Babe play in more games than Aaron Judge, but Aaron Judge's season was longer, but if he was hurt, then he played in less games. You know what I'm saying? You can't just simply go, well, that was a longer season. So I don't know how you handle that. And then you would revert back to 154, so now you have a less of a chance of breaking some of the records set in 162, clearly. But I've always said, I think the NBA season's way too long because they don't even care about it anymore. At least the stars don't seem to care. I'm okay with the NBA going to 60 or 40, and as one GM said, it don't matter how long your season is, you're still going to have load management problems. So whatever. And you know it's not going to be shortened because it's about money.
Yeah.
But Major League Baseball here, shortening the season 162, 154, you may say, well, that's less money. Well, you're going to make that money up with the international games. You're probably going to get paid by Major League Baseball to go do this, do that, whatever, represent the league. And so I'm okay with shortening Major League Baseball. I think Major League Baseball, 100 games would be plenty, in my opinion, 100. 120, I would listen to. 140, I'm cool with. But I'm okay with shortening Major League Baseball season. I think it's way too long as it is. And I think the NBA is too long. I think the NBA postseason is drug out way too long. I think the Major League Baseball playoffs is a little too long as well. I'm just a fuddy-duddy.
Hockey's the same as the
hockey,
NBA.
Right? Yes,
season's too long. Postseason's too long.
I agree. I think the only season that isn't too long is football. I think that's about right. I don't want to do more than 17. I think that's plenty, although nobody's going to complain if they go to 18 except maybe the players, and that's for them to take up with their own union. But in the new CBA at that point in time. So 162, 154 out to allow for more international play. What do you think? I like it. I have no problem with it.
I got to be honest with you. I don't care how many games are in a baseball season. Okay. Like it can be 162. It can be 154. It can be 140.
You just don't care.
I think there's too many games, no matter what number they're going to come up with, right? Like, it's just so 60 many
game
games.
Season. Dusty's like, let's go to the Cubs.
Yeah, like the six.
Season.
I love
that's too many.
I'm going to be completely honest with you. I loved it when it was a 60 game season. That,
it's a
off
sprint.
The COVID thing, right? Like, it was fun, right? Because you did, and you had, I mean, you put more thought into winning games to get to the postseason, too.
You did.
You don't care. I mean, you're going to give a game every fifth day. It doesn't matter right now, right? Like, but it did that year for sure. And I think if there's, I just think in any sport, if there's higher stakes, it's better.
I agree.
And there's not higher stakes in 162, there's not high stakes in 82 games.
Listen,
when teams can be 39 and whatever, 35 wins and get you into the play-in tournament now, right?
To prove
that's another reason the NBA don't need 82 games.
All the evidence you need to prove your hypothesis that you just said, all you got to do is look at this past NBA season to prove your point. All of a sudden, teams tried playing defense.
Yeah.
And there were lower scoring games at times in the playoffs. And we saw it was more physical style of play. That's because everybody was actually trying on both ends of the floor because they were playing for something, weren't they?
Yeah.
Regular season, not really playing for anything. Home court, which, you know, some teams don't even care about home court. LeBron doesn't worry about home court. All you got to do is steal one game on the road. We can win anywhere with the team if we're healthy. I mean, Michael Jordan didn't care about home court. I mean, it was nice when they had it, you know, but you don't have to have home court to win an NBA. And the Rockets didn't have to have it. It's nice to have, but it's kind of been, I don't know, it's been torpedoed a little bit when we look back at the last probably 10 years of the NBA, that home court's not quite as big of an advantage as you might think it is.
Yeah.
So if that's not as big an advantage, what are we killing ourselves for the regular season? We'll load manage. We'll rest up as long as we get into the tournament. We get into the dance, and then we turn it on, right? And that's what we saw. The
seven seed makes it to the Western Conference Finals, right?
Like, so an eight made it to the
NBA Finals. Yeah, and the eight made it to the Finals, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. NFL gambling suspensions are looming. Big surprise. Colts veteran Isaiah Rodgers, one of several NFL players facing a full season 2023 suspension as part of the league's latest investigation into gambling allegations. And according to CBS Sports, there are more than just Isaiah Rodgers. There's other players involved. We don't know those names yet. And we know Jameson Williams is already suspended for part of this year. Other players suspended for a full season. Calvin Ridley was suspended for a whole year due to bets he placed on NFL games, missed all of last season. Now he's with the Jaguars. But there is a second wave of suspensions coming from the National Football League. Rodgers is sure to be one of those. He's already admitted to his mistakes and apologized on social media. So we know he's one, but apparently there are others, and we don't know their names. Hopefully it's not one of your favorite players on one of your favorite teams that's going to torpedo your chance of winning a Super Bowl, or in the Broncos' case, winning eight games. Sorry, too easy. Just had to go there. You know, I am not going to hear the end of it if the Broncos somehow have a great year and beat the Chiefs, will I? You know
no,
what?
You're setting yourself up for that.
I am.
No, it's all right.
That's okay. I like Bantor. But if the Broncos beat the Chiefs, it's not the end of the world. The bottom line at the end of the day is I don't care if the Bengals beat the Chiefs three of the last four times, as long as the Chiefs were able to win Super Bowls. So, you know what? Broncos sweep the Chiefs for all I care this year. If at the end of the year the Chiefs are holding up the Lombardi, fighting for their right, and they have a back-to-back that cements their dynasty, you can have your two regular season wins. I don't care. As long as we beat you in the playoffs, if you even make it to the playoffs, that's all I really, truly care about. So, you know, hang your hat on. Yay! You know? Yay! You know, no offense to K-State fans here, but this is the example that pops in my head. Congratulations, you beat KU for the first time in many, many years in Manhattan. You had a whole DVD about it. You had T-shirts about it for a regular season win over your in-state rival. And that year, Kansas won the national title. Do you think Kansas was really worried about losing to Manhattan when they're hoisting the championship trophy and K-State didn't even, what did they do, first or second round that year?
Wisconsin beat them in the second round.
Yeah. Which would you rather have, a national championship or a regular season win against your in-state rival? Hello, I know that's an easy one, even for K-State and KU fans to agree on. So, yeah, Broncos, if you beat the Chiefs this year, guess what? The sun shines on a monkey's butt every once in a while. It's bound to happen at some point. Yeah, I lost a ton to the Chiefs. You're eventually going to beat the Chiefs. Somehow, some way, it's going to happen. Does that mean you're better than the Chiefs? No. Does that mean you're going to hoist the Lombardi? No. All I care about is at the end of the year, the Chiefs are hopefully the last team standing. So the NFL, let's see what happens with these players, and we'll see if it's any notable players and if it hurts the Chiefs, the Broncos, or any other team you're a fan of here in North Central Kansas.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.